to Melchior Talks Wheel of Time Theory podcast. Today is a very special episode. We haven't heard from my guest in what feels like months and months. What was it like? Lockdown one the last time we spoke to you or something ridiculous like that, I think?
I think it was. In fact, I think it was just before.
Yes, so that's like March was the last time we've heard from you, Null. But I've totally skipped your intro there. By the way, ladies and gents, Null is back on the podcast. Woo!
I'm taking a bow right now, which you can't see.
Yeah, he is taking a bow. Yes, very, very true. So here we are in November, and the last time we actually had you on the podcast was March. Has it been 8 months? That can't be right. I wasn't doing the podcast before March. I didn't start this till. Why am I saying March? That doesn't seem right.
Or was it when we just came back?
It must have been when we just came back. See, time is just in 2020, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it could have been last year, but who knows?
Who knows?
At some point in the past, we recorded a podcast.
Yeah, so, yeah, I feel like we did record something at some point.
We've recorded a lot of podcasts. However, most of them have fallen apart. So
this is true. This is our third time of trying to get you back after your initial appearance. The second time we recorded for like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, something ridiculous. And we got a double feed in the record because I recorded direct from Discord. And it just echoed so much that I had to re-record it as just me. And then we tried to record, I want to say a couple of weeks ago.
I think it was a few weeks.
A few weeks ago, beginning of the second lockdown here in the UK. And technology just wouldn't let it work. Everyone kept dropping out and disappearing. And yeah, so we're trying one more time. I have tested the audio from OBS, recording Discord, and we do not have a double line of audio this time. So that is good. Ooh. We might actually get this done. So after all these months, we're actually only on chapter 8, aren't we, Nell?
Yeah, and I've actually only read 4 more chapters. I'm up to... I messaged you earlier. I've not made notes on it, but I've finished chapter 11.
Excellent.
I think I made notes up to like a page and a half before. But the gist of it is so short and easy to explain. There really isn't much point in me trying to rush some notes to finish it off. It doesn't end with anything dramatic. So, anyway, we'll get to that.
We get there. All right. So, chapter 8 is where we're up to. So, we'll just crack through. So, we're back at the inn. And we've got Rand, Moraine, and Lan entering into the room where Tam is. Bran and Tom are having their conversation. You've noted here that Tom is clearly uncomfortable, makes his excuses and leaves. And Moraine tries to tell everyone to leave, but Bran begs to stay, and Bran is slightly frustrated because it's his inn, but leaves them anyway. Moraine's looking over at Tam, seems to be focusing through him rather than at him. Lan asks Bran about the sword that he carries. He mentions a heron usually signifies a master swordsman and comments on how unusual a story it would be to have ended up in the possession of a sheepherder. So any big thoughts on this sort of initial interactions when they've got back?
I'm trying to remember what I said last time, but I think mainly it's the big thing that I keep coming back to, and I'm sure I said it last time when we tried to record, is that Tam is not just some farmer.
No.
It's quite clear, and it keeps on being sort of thrust at you.
Mm-hmm.
That there's more that's happening, but it's never really sort of revealed what's going on. Well, it hasn't been yet what's going on. It's just another point where it's like, yeah, he's definitely something else, and I don't feel like they're going to tell me yet. So, yeah.
Well, it is only early in the first book, so... Yeah, they don't want to give away his story too soon, I suppose.
A lot of explaining to do.
A little bit. I mean, there's 13 and 3/4 books still to go, so there's space for explanation. Don't worry too much. we've got through that, and Rand is then chatting to Lan about basically saying if knowing about the mysterious rider in advance would have enabled them to save more of the village. But we get Moraine answering. She sort of turns around and stares at him. She says, it was a whole fist of Trollocs, 100. And if she had known before coming here, she would have brought maybe a dozen of her sisters, because one alone is not strong enough against them, even with the one power. But then you've got a bit of dissension from Lan, who seems to think they should have been made aware. And Moraine's like, you know, just cuts him off and says, there's no point making him feel responsible for something that he's not responsible for. She herself feels guilty for not realizing the distance that they've spread, and the raven they encountered yesterday should have been a warning. And we've discussed this raven before, haven't we?
Yeah, I said when they initially encountered it that I didn't think it was quite normal. It was the sidestep that kind of something else here. Some sort of intelligence, I guess, is the right word that a normal raven wouldn't have. Like someone throwing a rock directly at you, if you're not really sort of with it and you're not watching and there's not something else going on, it probably would have hit.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it just deftly sidesteps.
Yeah. Well, you even noted here that Lan explains the Dark One's minions often use a creature that feeds on death as spies, you know, and that sort of ties into that extra bit of intelligence, doesn't it, I suppose?
Yeah. I think that's kind of what she's saying, isn't she? That she should have picked up on the fact that they're a minion of the Dark One, and with the setting and everything that's going on, she should have been more aware. So I guess she's kind of just telling him that, you know, it's not all on you.
Mm-hmm. But during this entire time, Tam has been healed. We turn around and he looks a lot less flushed. Rand's feeling relieved, but Moraine cautions him because these blades are not very cool. You've made a few references to the blades here. The blades Trollocs use are maged in the forges in the valley known as... I'm going to ask you to say this. Can you remember how to say this?
I think it was Thakandar.
Oh, yes. Well done. On the slopes...
Oh, my God. Someone should be happy right now listening to this.
Yes, we have a live listener and they are a huge fan of pronunciation. And so much so that we even did an episode on it. And yeah, well done. You've nailed it there. We've got a round of applause from Zul. So yeah, nicely done. The blades often carry it.
The next one.
You're not going to go for the next one?
No.
Oh, go on, give it a go. Thakandar is on the slopes of
Sheol Gul.
Ooh, not too shabby. I like it.
Or is it Gul?
I think it's Gul correctly. You may have missed a letter there, if I remember. But you got another round of applause. So, you know, don't feel too shabby. You're doing good. They often carry a taint, these blades, from where they're made. So a stain of evil, you've written here. They make wounds that will not heal unaided and can cause deadly fevers, strange sicknesses that medicines cannot touch. So pretty nasty. You've made a note here. Moraine has soothed the pain, but the taint is still there, and if left, will regrow and consume him.
Yeah, when I originally was reading this and I got to this point of the notes, it kind of makes it clear, you know, she cautions Rand and it tells him all this stuff, and I was like, what? So she's not healed him? What the hell? And I sort of felt a little bit angry. I was like, what's going on here? Why hasn't she healed him? Can't she heal him? Then the next bit happens. But it kind of threw me that there was almost like two stages to the healing process.
Yeah, I have to say, when I first read it as well, I was the same. I was like, hold up, wait, you've just been healing him and he looks better, but he's not healed? Like, huh? But she takes out a little package, small silk wrapped package. There, get the words out, Rob. Use English. And Rand recognizes her, calling it an Angreal. And it's a small female figure. basically, she sits there, one hand on the figure, places the other hand on Tam, and starts to heal away. But you've got a nice little bit here because Lan and Rand have a conversation about the dark figure that's been wandering around the Two Rivers. So perhaps you could take us through your thoughts on this character.
Oh my God, I can't remember how you pronounce it.
Go on. Let's see if we can get through to three.
I want to say it's Mirandrel, but I think that's wrong.
I love it. Mirandrel. We'll just go with Mirandrel. That is canon now, ladies and gentlemen. I love it, Mirandrel. So tell us about Mirandrels.
For God's sake. So the name refers to a type of Trolloc, the leftovers from the Dreadlord's creation of Trollocs out of humans. So it's kind of explaining a little bit of the backstory, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Fade, Halfman, Lurk, Shadow Men are all names used. But now I can't remember how I just said it. Mirandrel. That's wrong. That is definitely wrong.
There is no N, we have been, it's been pointed out. So
Mirandrel.
There we go. A lot of people say Mirandrel as well, but Mirandrel works too.
The Aes Sedai are more powerful, but they... Huh? So this sentence doesn't make sense.
I think what you've tried to write here in your notes, this is wonderful. This is also what happens when you look at notes for 3 months, 4 months. But I think what you've tried to write here is... So Aes Sedai are more powerful than Mirandrels in general, but they do... The Mirandrel have access to powers from the Dark One, I think is what you've tried to write here.
Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it?
It does a little bit, yes.
So the Mirandrel are... they lead the Trollocs.
Yes.
Sort of like the generals, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
They're planning where to attack. They have no eyes, but they see in the dark. They can see in the dark or light.
Yes.
I was just going to ask a question then.
Okay.
So if the Aes Sedai are more powerful than them, but they have access to powers through the Dark One, I'm assuming that is sort of saying that, okay, on a one-on-one sort of basis, an Aes Sedai is a stronger fighter. However, with the access to the powers, they can be stronger. Is that kind of what it's saying? I can't remember sort of what specifically it was saying.
That's what your notes are implying.
Thanks. Yeah, brilliant.
I feel like if I sit here and explain Mirandrel in detail, I'll just give away what, you know, spoilers from the book is my concern.
True. And it's not a specific name, is it? So it's as I said, like a general's name. It's like calling someone a general. It's a type of darkspawn, if you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not singular.
No. It's not like, you know, there is one null. You know, this is multiple of this type of creature, but yeah, they're pretty freaky, I have to say. I'm curious if you have any comparisons when you first read this. I don't feel I've asked you this question. When you first read about Mirandrels, did you think did they remind you of any other creatures from fantasy in general?
Yes, and I feel like you probably have this one in your head, a certain Harry Potter creature.
To be fair, I do see the comparisons there to delusions would be this. They're the bad wizards and witches. I'm having a moment now. Delusions would hate me because she's obsessed with Harry Potter as well. Oh, they run Azkaban. They're Dementors. Yes.
Yeah, that's literally what I was trying to think of and what I had in my head.
Yeah, when I first read this, the reference came to mind was when you see the riders in Lord of the Rings. The Nazgul, when they're there on the Shire and it's all that foggy morning, and there's the Nazgul just sort of like takes a few steps in on the horse. And that's what them sort of stood over the Two Rivers was kind of my thought process when I first read this. But I was curious where you went with that.
I like that, I really... do see that.
It just embodies the creepiness, but I've discussed with others, I hope that it's creepier in the TV show. That's just me. So we've got this conversation going on, and Lan says that both him and Moraine failed to kill the one they encountered last night multiple times. So obviously it was being extra sneaky. But you followed on here with the discussion about Narg. So you've got Rand asking Lan why Narg said they just wanted to talk to him. And at Lan's steely stare you've written here quickly explains all that happened, including him killing said Trolloc. Lan smiles and congratulates Rand on managing to kill one, something few manage even more when alone and unaided. So that's, yeah, that's pretty cool. I don't know, when I read this, I feel like Rand was just very lucky.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. He gets sort of squashed underneath.
It just,
and just happens to have managed to have his sword sort of upright.
Yeah.
Definitely. It wasn't like, oh yeah, I will roll underneath and plunge my sword in sort of thing. It was a, oh, I'm going to die. And, oh, I didn't die. Oh.
Yeah. I feel like Lan is, it's just kind of trying to make him feel better here. As opposed to, well, you got very lucky there. Which is a nice moment, you know.
I think if you have a hero story, some point in the end, they'll all be going on about how he killed this Trolloc right at the start, and he was heroic and stuff, and he's just going to be sat there thinking, wasn't really what happened.
So, oh, sorry, is Rand going to be telling this story, or Lan's going to be telling this story?
Rand. Did I say Lan?
No, I missed what you said. When you said, oh, he's going to be telling this story, I was like, oh, which one? So Rand said...
Oh, no, I meant it's been like... Everyone else will be saying it like he's this hero.
Oh, right. I gotcha. Yeah, they'll be hearing the... it'll be twisted with Chinese whispers of him and this Trolloc in a galactic battle to the finish. Nice. I like it. I'm glad we both agree that he got very lucky there, because I remember reading that and thinking, don't think he did that well. I think it was just luck. So, but during this time, Moraine has gotten finished. And she comes to the boys and says it's done. Lan rushes to her side, and Rand goes to Tam's. He still looks very unwell, you've got here, but he's sleeping normally. And Moraine says he will recover, he just needs a few weeks in bed. Although she looks pretty wiped herself and could probably use some sleep. Yeah. So, and you've got some notes here about sort of Aes Sedai healing.
Yeah, so it just sort of explains a little bit more about them. So I thought it was worth taking note, because any chance to learn anything in this book so far is very important.
Mm-hmm.
So the Aes Sedai used to be much more powerful. They were able to heal even those with only a flicker of life. Now it's much harder. Much of their knowledge has been lost to time. And then it was just a bit about healing Tam has really taken a toll on Moraine. She seems a lot weaker.
So I'm curious, what does this tell you about Aes Sedai? You know, if as you say, they used to be able to heal pretty much anybody if they were still even on the cusp of death, and now they can't.
It made me think of them as sort of this is going to be the right way of wrong way of saying it, but I don't really know how else to explain it. It's sort of they're a relic of a time gone.
Okay.
Do you get what I mean?
Like, it
used to be something that was very big, but as time has gone on, their numbers have dwindled. I'm guessing maybe things have happened to mean that they no longer have access to what they used to.
Yep.
Because I feel like it mentioned in there about books and things.
Well, you've got a note there saying much of the knowledge is lost to time. Obviously, books are a big keeper of knowledge, aren't they? So.
Yeah, so if they've lost a lot of that, something's obviously happened. But if it's not being replaced, then it to me sounds like this sort of they're dying off.
Yep, I like your thought process there. I basically just wanted you to expand on that. That's what your notes were implying to me, and I thought I'd just get you to delve a bit deeper there. Yeah, it's got a. If that's happening, it's got to suck, isn't it, basically? So,
yeah. The good news, the taint is gone.
It is. The taint is gone. So, which is good for them. Rand is obviously very happy about this and pledges his thanks and willingness to do anything as a payment. You've noted it, except that which would harm the village or its people. Moraine says, fine, if you insist. And you're curious what she's going, if she was going to ask anything of him. Did anything pop to mind?
No, I think it was more a question of, as she sort of accepted it, but I don't think she was really like, oh yeah, you owe me a debt. And it made me wonder if she was actually going to bother.
Okay.
Or whether he's just going to, because I think I talked about in the last one how I was waiting for that the sort of quest giver moment, the thing that leads them down the path. And I know we're already starting on it, but I was wondering whether she's going to bother or whether he's going to be led down a path anyway. And she already kind of knows. I feel like she sort of knows a lot and it's not being said.
Well, you know, as we've said, it is only chapter 8. So, you know, potentially, you never know. We might get more, we might not. But that segues nicely because, as you say, quest giver and things of that nature, we then get talk of him leaving. So she says they can't talk more, assuming he'll be leaving at the same time as them. Aghast at the thought of leaving, Rand babbles. I like that image. Moraine cuts him off and it's not until Lan tells him he is talking when he should be listening that he stops doing his babbling. So Moraine,
reading that back, I really like that brings up a really nice mental picture.
Yeah, just sort of there, like, blah, 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 blah. It's good. Moraine gives him a smile, apologizes, she's quite tired and handled this poorly. Beached tells him it is him that must leave to avoid more danger for the villagers. The murderer and the Trollocs are here for a reason. They did not hunt any those who stumbled in their way, and they only burnt homes to create confusion. They were after boys of a certain age who live near Emmons Field. And you've picked up here that Ran is obviously concerned for Perrin and Matt, but Moraine assures them they are fine. And then he asks about Ben Cor and Lem Thane, to which Moraine answers they were never in any danger because they are a little older. They're only after two boys of a certain age, and Rand and his two friends are weeks apart. They are the ones the murderer were after.
Can I interject here with a question
that Go for
you
it.
Won't answer? But I'll ask it anyway. How does she know? So how does she know that they are after boys of a specific age, like a very specific age, who live in that specific area?
Ladies and gentlemen, I have said... carry on, sorry.
I'm just going to say, and also, why is the Dark One, or how does the Dark One know about them? Like, where has this... You know, they've lived their life pretty normally with nothing interesting really happening. And then all of a sudden, you have what appears to be the dark and the light side descending upon this very small particular spot.
Invading the village, ha ha ha.
And it's just like, what has started it? And that was certainly my feelings then. I obviously know a little bit more, although the thoughts are still there because nothing's ever answered, ever.
Most things are eventually answered. I mean, I've read all the books, and most things are eventually answered. Obviously not all, otherwise I wouldn't be doing this. I would just be enjoying reading them. But I am going to give you, I know I've given you this answer in the past, and but I've never actually said it to you on the podcast, so I'm going to enjoy saying this. And my answer to your questions, read and find out. They're good questions. They're very valid questions at this stage of the book. To give you any information would just to be filling you with spoilers. But they are great questions.
I feel like if I was somebody else reading and sort of maybe listening in, these would all be the sort of questions that I'd be going, what, why? Because it, you sort of pick up little bits. You pick up about, you know, Tam's obviously had some of the history, and we've already learned some of that. He's potentially from, I don't know whether clan is the right word, a different group of people,
mm-hmm.
as in Randis.
Right.
You know, there's all these little things.
Okay, well, a question for you, Null. Yeah, if you had to theorize about what it is, I'll give you the quote here that you've put in the notes. In one of you, or all three, there is something the Dark One fears. Any thoughts on what that fear might be?
If I had to make a really wild guess, I would suspect, get the word out, that one of them is the dragon.
Okay.
That
is your out there wild guess at this stage.
Yeah, it's a very, very sort of wild out there one. It's not.
I love your commitment to this. You're like, it's wild. It's wild. It's very out there.
I feel like a sort of a scientist. I'm like sort of going, oh, my theory is this. As the evidence comes in, I shall keep editing it.
I love it. Okay. Well, your unedited theory so far is that one of the boys is the dragon. Okay.
I would even go as far as to say it's probably going to be Rand if that is the case, because he is a center point of the story so far.
Okay, that was my next question. Like, do you feel committed enough to be able to pick one? But you've done that, so okay.
If I was an author and I was going to really try and confuse everybody, I would make it somebody else. Just so
another one of the three, or somebody else?
Yeah,
okay,
just
another one of
throw you off the trail, because I think if I got to a point and suddenly I find out it's Perrin, I'll be like, what?
Okay, right. I need to, we'll remember that for the end. We'll add that into the end of the notes, because when we finish off the notes, we'll have predictions for next time. We can review it and see where we go. But that's your out there theory so far. Okay, cool. Interesting, as they say on the other First Time Reader podcasts. But yeah, we get it's a bit of back and forth arguing is how it carries on from there. And, you know, they thought the Trollocs are just going to come back, and Rand realizes it. So he's like, okay, fine. His determination sets in. They all need to leave, because if they aren't the two rows, the attacks will most likely stop and people will be safer, maybe even saved. He suggests a couple of places for safety. Would you care to take a stab at how those are pronounced?
I want to say Bearlon.
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner. Oh. Very nice.
Caimlin.
Yes. Oh, look at you. Knocking him out the park tonight. I love it. So, yeah, he suggests Bearlon or Caimlin, but Lan says they won't be safe there either. But Moraine then comes in and offers a tad bit of hope in the form of going to Tar Valon, because even during the Trolloc Wars, the Dark One could not get in. Aes Sedai would be there to protect them, and he may be able to discover why the Murdral is after them in the vast knowledge that all the Aes Sedai have collected. Do you think that's a good idea? Bad idea? What do you reckon?
Well, I mean, if you were going to pick somewhere safe, a place full of magic warriors, it's probably an all right place to be. The question is there an ulterior motive?
Oh, to get the boys there, you mean?
Yeah, you've learned quite a bit about Moraine, and you haven't learned much about her history, but you've certainly interacted a lot, and you get the feeling that she's all right. You know, she's trying to help them. She's helped Tam. She tried to protect the village.
Mm-hmm.
But you know nothing else about her. You don't know her history. You don't know what these people are like. And from the sort of the history that you get when they're talking about Aes Sedai and everything like that, is that these people are to be feared.
Yeah.
So while I'm inclined to think that she's good, who knows at this point, like, they might get there and it's all a trick.
So are we on the fence on that possibility, or?
I would lean towards good, but that's just probably my nature.
Okay. Well, that fits in with your lean towards good perception of Moraine at this stage. So, yeah. All right. So leaning towards good as choices of where to go. Sorry, I've just flicked back in the notes to try and see if we could find a confirmation of how you felt about Moraine, but I felt that it was on the okay about it, you know, on the.
Yeah, I think so. I think I said that early on when we first interacted with her, that I was like, I think she's going to be good.
Yeah. So, and then things start to pick up a little bit, basically, because Rand wants to stay until Tam wakes up to say goodbye. And Moraine's like, no, we're leaving when it gets dark. Because to stay is to invite danger. So Moraine disappears to get Matt and Perrin, tells Rand not to tell anybody. And then we get a discussion about the dragon mark on the inn door that someone seems to have put there overnight or this morning or whatever it is. It's not mentioned specifically when. We have Bran and his wife come in after they've gone, and Rand subtly questions Bran about the attack, confirms that the Aes Sedai was telling the truth. Mistress Alvear tells Rand that he needs to eat and he should sleep in the next room, but Rand doesn't want to leave, so he moves his chair near to the fire and settles back, and he plans to stay up in case his father wakes. But as soon as he settles, he falls asleep. And we're at the end of the chapter. Whoa, completed the whole chapter. So just enjoy that moment. There's been no crap outs on audio or people dropping out of Discord or anything. It's quite good. So yeah, it's quite quick to leave, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of the chapters started off quite sort of slow, didn't they? And then this is kind of like, as soon as he's told that, you know, he's going to have to go, things start picking up, and there's lots of little bits there.
Yeah.
With, you know, Moraine looking after Tam, and like the little conversations that they all had. A lot of little bits of information that made it a very full chapter for me. But yeah, it was suddenly got very interesting.
Yeah. It was the previous chapter ended on, you know, is he going to be healed? Is he going to make it, sort of, you know, questioning note? And we've ended up here where he's healed. And, you know, now it's a case of, right, we fixed your dad, but now we've got a Scarper. A question I want to throw out here. If he hadn't dragged Tam back to Emmons Field, and he had stayed at the farm, do you feel that they would have come and gotten him? Because Moraine, you know, the way she's talking here and the way you've taken your notes says that, you know, it's the three of you and you need to leave. But if he hadn't turned up in Emmons Field, they wouldn't have had that conversation. Do you think they would have come out to get him? After
I'm going to say yes, because she's already interacted with him, hasn't she? So initially when they first went to the inn, when they first got there, and he was talking to Matt and Perrin, and the Raven appeared, and all that interaction happened, and Moraine came. She was already, I don't think intrigue's the right word, but she was interested, and she was showing interest. She'd already made the comment about, you know, I'll have things for you to do later. Come and see me. She gave them the coin.
Yeah.
There was already that sort of building of something's happening.
Yes.
And so I'm pretty certain that she already knew that he was one of the ones that they needed to take, or that they were looking for, before the Trollocs attacked.
Right. So does that suggest anything to you in particular about Moraine's knowledge prior to arriving?
She had obviously gone there for a reason, which she knew.
Mm-hmm.
She hadn't just wandered there, and I think she mentions the fact that they were there looking at the history of the place, or looking at the history, weren't they? They were there for, I can't remember the term she used, but she was sort of suggesting that.
Yeah, she looks for stories and history and things of that. She hunts those things down.
Yeah, so I suspect she was looking for something or looking for them. Maybe she didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But to suddenly be interested in them when she's had a very small conversation with them makes me think that she was sort of, even if she didn't know, she sort of went, ah, right, okay, these might be important or these might be part of whatever.
Cool. I say that question has popped to me, not the specifically go out to the farm if you hadn't come to Terman's Field question, but the her prior knowledge, because in your notes, you've we've covered the rest of it, to be honest, but you've put there the conversation about, you know, with knowing about the rider have made a difference. And you've put she speaks as if they knew something was coming. How? And if she didn't realize that the distance they had spread, why is she there? And you put you seriously doubt it's for the local history. So I was just curious on, you know, the knowledge that she does or doesn't have or says she's looking for or not looking for. And yeah,
I haven't read this bit before I just answered that. But thinking about it, to answer sort of the she speaks as though she knew something was coming and then the how is when I wrote this, I think I was implying that she knew that the Trollocs were going to show up.
In fact, I think we actually covered that for a moment, didn't we?
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think she knew. So far, we've got a very small part of the story, haven't we?
Yes.
So she knew something. Didn't necessarily have to be that the Trollocs were coming. It just has to be that something is happening in the greater world. The bigger picture that meant that she was looking for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what's going on there.
Yeah, it does leave you very sort of confused. But, you know, I think you've picked out the important things there. It's just a very gentle ease into the chapter. And then we get to the end, it's just like whoosh, everything's going and changing. But that's nothing compared to chapter 9, really. Now, do you want to take us through this, or do you want me to kind of sort of run through your notes? And you've got some highlighted bits here, so we can talk about those, or do you want to sort of just go for it bit by bit? How would you like to do this next one? Because it is quite a lot in this dream, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a pretty heavy dream. Right, you go through it, and then we'll pick up on the bits where...
All right.
It's like, well, okay.
Love it. So Rand is dreaming, as I've just said. He's in a red, sunburnt, barren land, which is rather like being in a hot desert, but it's cold. Rand is running, being chased by Trollocs. He cannot see them, but he hears them and knows that they come for him. At the knife point of a rock's knife edge, he stops. The floor falls away, and a great canyon before him, filled with mist that ebbs against the wall. Bright flashes ignite within the mist, and breaking through ahead is a huge mountain, bigger than he has ever seen. And I think this next line is a good one to stop for. Rand feels like he knows this place. The memories run from his grasp, but they are there, buried. So, that it implies from reading your notes here that you think he knows this place he's dreaming about.
Well, I mean, it suggests that in the book. But
yeah, that's true. Sorry. I would look at the book, but you've got it, so.
It's just a question of whether he knows it as in he's dreamt something like this before, or whether this is some sort of...
sort of place he's been, is that what you're saying?
Premonition, or...
Oh, okay.
You know, so is this just a... It seems a bit of a weird thing to dream about, even if your brain's trying to process a lot of horrible stuff that's happened.
Yeah. Okay.
Why a red, cold desert? Why? So there's got to be... I just couldn't work out whether it's something that is like... the mountain is something he's going to encounter later, or whether it's sort of coupled together from memories from before.
Right.
I think that's where...
Got you. Okay. Well, we'll carry on. And I've got a question I'll ask towards the end to try and get... a prediction out of you, I suppose, or your, you know, make a decision on something. But in reference to that mountain that we just talked about, Rand says that he feels like it's pulling at him, and he feels fury at being led like a lamb. or his fury at being led like him holds him back, and the mountain calls out to him. He shouts, "Light consume you." Would you like to take a gander at this word, sir?
Shaitan.
Pretty close, yeah. It's not too bad. I mean, that's how I say it. It's I think it's Shaitan. Is that, I think when we were going through the companion, when I was talking with Zul about this, but Shaitan is it's pretty much how everyone says it. So you're good there, mate. Don't worry. The smell of death surrounds him. A tall, dark figure, a hideous tall, dark figure, extends a hand. Not caring about the fall, Rand throws himself out of reach, falling. Pretty creepy dream so far, I've got to say. But yeah, abruptly he's no longer falling. He's now standing on grass with trees and hills. And there is an air of winter about the place. Ahead he can see another mountain. This one he feels is normal, if not out of place, alone. And below the mountain, on an island in a bending river, is a walled city. He knows this place is good and sets off for it. And your note here is this dream about picking sides.
Yeah, I think I got to this bit and I was like, you've got this sort of desolate, horrible, cold landscape with this horrible creature that's come to grab him. And then he jumps away from it and he's suddenly in this very picturesque, calm place where he sees somewhere that he knows is safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, is this like a good and bad sort of thing that maybe the Dark One's reaching out to him while he's asleep and trying to sort of lay some claim on him?
Right, okay. So, I mean, yeah, good comparison there between the two, isn't it? We've got the opposite type of landscape going on. You know, we've still got that, the air of winter that was a cold place before, so we've still got that. But we've still got a mountain, but this one feels normal. And then, although we didn't have some kind of city in the other one, we did have a location that was down below, but this one's a walled city that he feels is good, and the previous one was a sort of valley with mist and such. So it's quite, as you say, the picking sides thing, it's really interesting you picked up on that, because it is an opposition of imagery in the dream sequence, yeah. Isn't it? So, but it carries on. We get the stench of death surrounding him again. Without looking, he knew what was behind him, and as his hand reached out again, he ran as fast as he could towards the city to sanctuary. The city, rather than getting closer, recedes from him, and the faster he runs, the further it fades from his reach. He knows if the figure behind him touches him, he will go mad. He trips while he's running, and cold, hard cobblestone meets him, and when he looks up, the arches into the city are right before him. Smiling people urge him over the bridge and into the city. And you've put here in notes, why can't he understand? This city is a thing of pure beauty.
It's been months, so I don't understand why I wrote the first bit. But
that's why I've asked. I'm curious. Why can't he? What is it he's lacking to understand there?
Oh, Jesus Christ. That would have been specific to something, and I have no clue what.
It's fine. Really, ladies and gentlemen, we're having our first hashtag blame COVID moment, and that's absolutely fine. I love it. It's all good.
It makes sense later on. Like,
yeah,
a couple of little sections down from that, it makes perfect sense to be there, but not there.
So maybe I have no clue. Maybe as you were typing your notes after reading the section, you're then just like halfway through, like, why doesn't he get this? And just typed it in there by accident. But we'll bring it back up. It's okay. As you say, this city is a thing of pure beauty. As you, the next part of the notes say, Rand enters and is awestruck by the beauty of the place. Music from all over blending with the crowds, sweet scents and sharp spices fill the air. Down the wide street he entered on lays a huge white tower where he knows he will find peace and knowledge. So taken by the beauty of the city, he dallies, turning away down a narrow street to experience more. When he looks up, the white tower is ahead. Over and over, he changes direction. Always the white tower lays before him. And the people, still friendly, now full of shattered hope, plead he continues to the tower. So I feel like your notes...
This is so annoying. So annoying.
I remember you telling me about this.
It actually hurts just thinking about it.
what your notes, your not your notes about the chapter, but your notes about your thoughts are actually quite articulate about this. Why did he act like that? He just escaped the evil figure, and when safety is in front of him, he decides to wander off. The new smells and sounds might be exciting, but seems a bit silly at odds with the perseverance he showed taking Tam to Emmett's field.
Yes. I actually feel frustrated just thinking about reading this, because I can imagine, but I can picture how I felt at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I read this and was just being a bit weird, but this got to be really bad.
No, you're fine. When I first read it as well, I was just like, so you've just gone running to get there. You fall over and somehow that gets you there in an instant, despite running, getting you further away from it. And now you refuse to go to this place that you explicitly say you know you will help you find peace and knowledge. So yeah, I'm totally with you. It was frustrating to read as a first time. Later on, it will, you know, as you get more and more information, as with anything you read in the first book, as you get more information going on and into other books, it will change your understanding of the situation. But at the beginning, uber frustrating. So completely with you there. And, you know, then it gets even weirder and stranger, as your notes point out. So as he goes to the tower, people's faces return to the previous happy expressions, and the small children scatter petals in front of him. The extravagance seems normal for some reason, and the kids begin to sing as he walks, with musicians joining in. Girls place garlands around his neck. Hello, Hawaii. It's kind of what it feels like there. And his feet pitched to join the dance. I think you meant itch there. Thank you, autocorrect. And he did, laughing as he moved with them. It is your destiny, a voice spoke in his head, and he saw the tower in its full glory, carved, rising above as a palace. And as the crowd stopped at the base of the stairs, he continues moving onwards. And the voice once again says, your destiny. But yeah, then your notes is like, at this point, I'm uncertain about the nature of this. The idea of a voice whispering ahead is all round creepy. While I'm inclined to think it's good comparatively compared to the previous quote thing that was trying to get him, it still doesn't feel right.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you're reading this and I'm listening as you're saying it, because I'm actually experiencing the emotions I felt at the time of reading it. Like, I felt as the crowd changed again and the dancing started and he sort of was compelled to join in. I felt that uneasiness settle back in. So whereas before I'm really frustrated at him for sort of dawdling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm then like, oh, maybe you should dawdle some more. Don't go there. I'm not sure this is okay.
So you were frustrated that he wouldn't go there before. Yeah. But now that he's going there, you're like, I'm not actually sure you were wrong to not go there.
Yeah, if he was walking up the steps and everything was normal and, you know, okay, maybe people are cheering, I'll accept that. But sort of feeling compelled to dance in some sort of ritualistic, sort of crazy way, a little bit concerning.
Well, you know, maybe not totally out of place, because the next part of the dream is scroll work covered doors at the top of the stairs, somewhere magic, you've written. The portal opens, he enters, and the doors close behind him with a crash. And then the quote, we've been waiting for you, the murderer says.
Yeah.
and your notes here are brilliant. So I'm going to quote, because they're just brilliant for this. What the fuck? I felt this right into the poop pan. Brilliant. I thought this was a metaphorical dream about choice. Does Rand have the strength to resist the dark side? Can he follow the light? But no, it's just some sort of creepy trap. What are the repercussions for this?
Yeah. It did a really good job of having a nice couple of twists there, didn't it?
Yeah. So your feeling about him dancing as he walks up the steps is, pretty spot on, because it's ended up in a dream version of a trap for him, isn't it? So,
yeah.
But what do you think? Is this, so my question at the end here, which kind of sort of I tried to answer at the beginning, but I don't think I got across right. So is this, I mean, a premonition, as you've potentially said, is this a place that is just a random concoction of imagery and ideas because of the shitstorm of the night and day that he's been through? Or is this a place that is, you know, he's sinned somewhere or something, like an actual place? So, like, is it something that his brain's completely made up, a place he's actually sin, or some place he's actually sin? Because, you know, yeah, are these real places? There we go. Thank you. Thank you, chat. Chat's got it there for me. I was just like, my articulation level was very, very low there. So are they real places, places his head's made up, or is this a premonition, which obviously could be combined of the two? What do you, if you had to pick one, what would you pick?
Can I throw in a fourth option?
Absolutely, you can throw in a fourth option.
I think it's a place that is being pressed upon him.
Okay.
I don't think it's something of his brain. It feels too much like, it still feels like a weird choice thing.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gets confusing because obviously he's gone to what is perceived as being the nice place and ended up in a trap. But I think it's something that maybe he had no way of escaping in mm-hmm. it. Maybe whatever choice he made, whether he stopped right at the start or whether he carried on and jumped off and, you know, ran towards the city, it was all going to end in that point in the dream where he was caught.
Right.
And it's some sort of mind fuckery.
Okay.
That's kind of what I feel. I don't feel like it's necessarily somewhere he's been, although maybe it is, but it feels more like it's some kind of mind game that's being played upon him.
Right. Okay. Cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. And we'll carry on from there. I look forward to when we get to like books 4 or even 3, because then it starts to expand a bit there and we can start talking about some of these bits again and be like, hey, dude, remember this moment where I said, interesting. Now I can explain what I meant. But Rand wakes up from this very confusing dream with a jolt and find that Tam is still asleep. The fire's been tended. The blanket lays at his feet. He's got a bit of a cold sweat going on. And he's curious. He wonders if naming the Dark One brings attention in dreams as well as real life. And you've answered this question here already. And you've said, I think it's fair to say this wasn't an ordinary dream. So yes. Yes, it appears it does. Well, Rand's been sleeping all day anyway, and his belly is grumbling. So he stands and moves to a table where Mistress Alvira has left a tray of food, which you haven't put any detail on, but I am going to stop for a moment and talk about, because this is one of the things I've actually made on the YouTube channel that I do as well. At your suggestion, Null, you suggested make the bone broth and then the selection of bread, ham and cheese there. And yeah, I did actually recently make it. I turned it into a beef stew because bone broth is it's pretty much just boiling bones and making almost like I suppose, bone soup out of it, if you wanted to get some kind of analogy. And while that's nice, it's not something, I didn't have bones floating around to make that with. So I made a beef stew instead. And then I tweaked the ham, bread and cheese, and I made what the Americans would call a grilled cheese, but and what the Brits would call a cheese toasty. And I have to say, if Mr. Salvia makes anything as nice, he was a very lucky man, I have to say. It was delicious. Yeah.
I would just like to say I have watched it. I did skip the cat chat just in case there was any sort of spoilers in there. Brilliant. If you haven't seen it, what the hell are you doing? Go and watch it.
Oh, thank you.
But not right now. Wait until this is finished.
Yeah,
and then
wait,
go and watch
wait
it.
Until you finish listening and then, yeah, then go watch it.
Or pause it and go and watch it and then come back. You know, choice is yours. Just make sure you watch it. Also, like and subscribe.
Okay. Null's doing all my advertising this evening. Lovely. I didn't even ask him to do that. It's brilliant. All right, cool. So we've had the delicious stew and toasty. Tam is still sleeping. But as Rand goes over, he wakes him up because he sort of puts his hand on his head. And despite his voice being very weak, his gaze is clear and steady. And so obviously Rand is believing the Aes Sedai when she said that he will be fine. And Rand brings Tam up to speed on everything that's happened, leaving out a few details here or there. Obviously, I don't think he wants to go nitty-gritty for everything. Tam cautions Rand that although Moraine may not have directly lied to him about the reasons the Trollocs were there, sometimes the words they speak can be interpreted in the wrong way. I want to pause on that for a moment. So what do you think that implies?
I don't know how to describe it, but I guess what he's saying is sort of that just because she has said things like, you know, I'm here because of, I'm interested in the local history, does not mean that she is literally there because she is interested in the local history. Like, it could be something more specific about it. Just because you take it one way doesn't mean that is what is being there.
Okay, so
the reason behind it. I've explained that really badly.
No, I think I get what you're saying there. Are you saying that she might say, I'm interested in local history, but that's not the only thing she's come for?
Yeah, I guess what you take away from it is not necessarily what is meant.
Okay. So just because she said something doesn't mean that that's everything implied. Is that kind of where you're going with it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'm sure we'll cover more on that later. Don't worry. But he tells Rand, Tam tells Rand that he should be going with them. And Rand was obviously expecting Tam to have, you know, a million reasons why he shouldn't, or at least hoped he would. And your notes here have expanded a little bit. I feel like Rand, and also yourself, are not being given the full picture. Although Rand knows more than he's told Tam, and you feel that perhaps Tam is deflecting, avoiding being completely honest. You don't think he's doing it maliciously, but maybe he's trying to protect him or himself.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're just reading too much into this.
I think it was because of the because Tam doesn't really try and stop him. He just kind of goes, no.
Okay. So did you feel Tam was hiding something then?
Well, I feel like if Tam didn't know more, he would have reacted differently.
Okay.
I think because I think he knows more, I think he is acting like that as a, like, I don't want to tell you. Because he doesn't know that he was muttering things on the way to Edmund's Field.
That is very true.
He doesn't know what Rand thinks he knows. So maybe he doesn't want to give away, you know, something about the history that he doesn't want to share.
Right. And when you say that you feel like Tam knows more than he's letting on about specifically the Trollocs turning up,
about maybe the reason why they're there.
Okay, right. Cool. All right, well, I mean, that kind of covers a little bit about the next point in your notes anyway, which is a nice segue. Tam does have a few reasons he'd give Rand, but instead tells him if they're after him, then Tarvalon will be safer. So as you say, yeah, he's holding back a few things there. And more on the caution about Aes Sedai listening. Think sharp, guard your tongue. And that extends to the Warder too, because they are deeply bonded and there are no secrets between them. And you've highlighted a bit of the next section here. So what little Rand knows about Warders from songs and stories suggests there is some sort of exchange of power. Warders can heal quicker, go longer without food or water, and can sense creatures of the Dark One from a distance. And that explains how Moraine and Lan knew about the Trollocs while they were inside the inn. So, I mean, that sounds pretty cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, and also a little bit... So I felt sort of like, wow, okay, the Warders are cool. Like, they've got these extra powers. But they're also sort of... I got the feeling that they were kind of sort of chained together, if you get what I mean. Like,
yeah.
They are bonded, but bonded's not a strong enough word.
Yeah.
And that kind of made me think, oh, it's not so good, is it? Because you're kind of stuck with somebody.
Yeah, that is true. And it seems like a pretty significant bond with what benefit he gets out of it. If he's getting that deal from the bond, healing quicker, longer without food and water, things like that, what do you think Moraine gets out of it?
Well, my initial reaction would be, oh, yeah, well, she gets protection, but she doesn't need it, does she? She's pretty damn powerful herself.
That has been demonstrated, yes.
Does she really, like... All right, cool. Yeah, you've got somebody else to fight with. And obviously that makes you as a team stronger. But there's got to be more to it, surely. And I suppose I didn't really think about it before, but you.
Well, I just
question whether there's some sort of, do they have to exchange something else? If there's an exchange of power to the warder, is the warder, say, giving life to the Aes Sedai?
Well, the reason I asked was to get a prediction or a guess out of you, basically. If you had to guess what Moraine gets out of it, what would you pick? And if nothing comes to mind, that's okay. But I was just curious if you had anything.
I wouldn't be shocked if it was something like life, like, you know, shared life or something like that.
Okay. Cool. I wanted to get your thoughts on the bond between them that's described there. So, yeah, interesting. I like it. Rand and Tam have a bit of a discussion like we do, why it's all centered on Rand. Tam asks how soon they'll be going, because he reckons in a few days he can head off with them, you know, maybe they can get a new flock going, start again, stuff like that. Because obviously he's heard about the farm situation by this stage. And Rand tells him that Moraine told Mistress Alvear it might be weeks before Tam is fit enough. And knowing how stubborn Mistress Alvear can be, Tam sighs and says maybe he can change Marin's mind. And your notes here are quite fun. You put, yep, that is right, Robert, as in Robert Jordan, not me. Just drop a first name in there and let me try and work out who it bloody refers to. I see your game and say checkmate, Mistress Alvear. but yeah, so he says maybe he can change Marin's mind, knowing full well that it won't happen. Nice, stubborn Two Rivers mindset there. But I just love the way you popped in that we don't find out her name's Marin Alvear until suddenly Tam just thinks of her as Marin instead of Mistress Alvear.
A nice moment where you kind of get hurt. Who's that? Right, okay. That makes sense. All right, let's go with that.
Yeah. Again, he asks where Rand's heading off, and it's going to be tonight. And says, oh, it's a shame you can't wait a few days, or maybe I can catch you up type thing. Lan pops in and pops head around the corner and tells Rand that they must leave because trouble is coming and they have to leave now. So Rand grabs his cloak. At the sight of him taking off the sword and belt, Tam gets him to pause and says, you know, keep it. And despite the urgency, Rand leans down and embraces him in a hug. And you put, this got me a little bit. I'm on a tram, for fuck's sake. Okay, I'm stopping reading now. So, did that pull the heartstrings there, mate?
It did a little bit. The moment where he's kind of taken the sword off and about, and Tam sort of stops him and he's like, no, like, I think you're going to need it or take it for protection sort of thing. It's a little bit like, I wasn't expecting them to separate so soon.
Does this, what sort of goodbye does this feel like to you? Does this feel like a, you know, goodbye, I'm not going to see you for 20 years. This is goodbye, I'll see you soon. This is somewhere in the middle. How did it come across to you?
The hopeful part of me says that this is sort of a hopeful goodbye of like, yeah, Tam will catch up. The other part of me is sort of saying, while they might think that, I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
I think this is sort of goodbye, at least for a very long time.
Oh.
And I think that's probably why it got me, because I was like, they're kind of making it sound hopeful, but I don't think it's going to be like a reunion very soon.
No, it's, it is a, As you've said here, you've obviously felt it, and it does feel like a bit more of a permanent goodbye, as you've said.
I actually, the comment underneath is sort of explains how I felt, I think.
You said Rand promises to come back. Of course you will, Tam laughs. Tam tells him that when he does, he'll have loads of sheep for him to tend. And you've put, I feel like this isn't such a merry goodbye. It's more like trying to grin through the pain. Rand's desperation not to leave his father battling against the inner turmoil of protecting everyone, and Tam being strong for his son when he knows they will potentially not meet again. So, yeah, you're clearly feeling on the, you know, goodbye forever type vibe here. I kind of wish I'd read a bit further down the notes before I asked you that question. But it's okay, because, you know, we've got your hopeful side out of it as well. But yeah,
we'll... they're, you know, I could be surprised, and you know, in sort of a month in the story timeline, Tam might have caught up.
Well, things do whip back and forth here sometimes. I mean, you were telling me one day, many months ago now, how you were like, oh, this is a nice little moment here. They've done this, or, you know, like dropping off some brandy at the inn and stuff. And then, you know, on your way home from work that night, you were like, holy shit, Rob, it all just went down when the farm got attacked. So, you know, the story does whip around a little bit. You never know. You never know. But yeah, so even though we're having this very teary moment, Lan gets very frustrated, just sort of grabs Rand and pulls him out of the room. He says, don't you understand the word trouble? They leave the room, head down the stairs, Matt joining them, and Lan motions them to wait. He looks out the window and opens the front door a little bit so that they can look out too. And there is a crowd gathered outside. Coplins, Congers, Senbui, they're all gathered before Moraine, who stands facing them with her staff. And it's getting a bit mobbish here, isn't it, really?
Again, it's kind of, you have this kind of calm sort of moment where you sort of know what's going on. And then suddenly he's like, yeah, right, okay, let's throw in some violence.
Yeah, it's not a fun moment, but she's very cool and calm. They're basically blaming the Trolloc attack on Moraine and Lan's presence, and they should burn them out. Harry claims Aes Sedai bring bad luck in his speech attempting to rouse the crowd, and when it doesn't, he elbows Sen to meekly join in. Bran and Hurel walk into the center of the gathering and address the crowd. Bran's furious they're attacking Moraine, pointing out the people she's helped, and he asks if by burning them out, will they be burning his inn? Obviously the reply is no, and he asks if they question his judgment, and the crowd's momentum is diminishing. But Moraine kind of then steps in at this point, and very angrily, you know, she angrily tells them that she's so shocked to find them scared when facing danger, and tells them of their own history. And you had your notes say you had bullet point in the section, but you didn't hit save, so we've got a shortened version. Now, I could speed through this, but I'd rather just get your thoughts on this history in general rather than go into too many specifics.
It's probably easier because even though it's shortened, it's still goddamn long.
It's a long section of the book, of the chapter, but it is the end of the chapter. I actually narrated this for another channel quite a while ago, and I remember reading it thinking, oh my god, I didn't realize how much there was to this chapter. But yeah, what were your out of the whole history of firstly, let's have you try and say the word there of the name of the city. Can you have a stab at how that's pronounced?
I want to say it's Manitherin.
Okay. We'll see if we get any round of applause in the chat from Zul. so Manitherin, what was your, out of this whole story of the soldiers, you know, being a thorn to the Dark One side, always there where fighting was going on, stopping the Trollocs, close is the phrase you've got there. Now that you've had feedback, I can tell you it's Manitherin. So you're pretty, yeah, very close. Rather than Manitherin, it's Manitherin.
If you break it down, it's quite clearly got the ether in the middle of it. So yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah. That, I mean, as we've said before, people pronounce things all differently in the books, so don't panic too much. But yeah, they're the Thorn in the Dark One side. They're always there. But then pretty much the Dark One, or the, you know, the Trollocs, they've all turned up to take their homeland while they're away fighting a war somewhere else. And we head back and we have this heroic last stand, and basically just the country just diminishing to nothing through death, destruction, and the One Power. Out of this whole just section, what did you get the most from it? Or what was the bit that got most of your interest?
Well, I think my interest was piqued that there used to be some great sprawling city at the mountain. I think it sort of shocked me that they knew so much. They didn't know so much of their own history. That there was, you know, there used to be this great army. The people were really brave and hardy. And I kind of imagined them sort of like, I guess like Vikings.
Right.
You know, these big, strong, brave fighters that sort of laughed in the face of death and went off and, you know, constantly fought against this evil.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that kind of doesn't seem like it's known by anybody. Like, you've just got all these farmers now that kind of like the status quo, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the question I want to ask you. Is she telling the truth? Is this real? Is this actually the history of the Two Rivers?
Oh, well, I had never thought of that question.
Okay, but, well, that kind of answers it. You feel that it was, you took it as given face value, but just after we had that conversation of, you know, you have to listen carefully to what an Aes Sedai says and that.
Oh, yeah, all right.
I just thought I would ask the further question because she's telling this big story to this mob. You know, like, do you feel that she's being, you know, telling their actual history, telling a history? Like, is wordplay coming into effect here, or is this, you know, on the up and up completely type thing?
I mean, I would question what her motive would be, because she's trying to dispel the crowd, isn't she? She's trying to, like, shut them up, sort of say, what the hell are you doing? I thought you'd be better than this.
Yeah.
This is who you were, in inverted commas, because as you're suggesting, maybe it's not true, but she could defeat this crowd, quite possibly.
Well, that was it. When I first read this, I was like, this is very interesting history of a country that at the time, and for very long after, I couldn't pronounce. But I struggled to see how it helped to get rid of the crowd, as you've just said.
I mean, no, because what I was going to say is what she's trying to do is get rid of the crowd. If she'd wanted to, she could have probably beat them all up.
Violence is never the answer.
she's strong. She's got magic. And these people are, while they might, in this situation, seem to be going towards violence, I feel like it's more sort of bark than bite.
Right.
I expect she's an actual fighter. So the chances are she's going to do quite a lot of damage and scare them off. So she could have took that way. Instead, she's telling them this big, long story of who they are,
mm-hmm,
or who they are supposed to be, in order to get them to question what they're doing now.
Okay.
I feel like it's a bit of a long-winded way of sort of calming a crowd down when she could have just bopped a few heads and they'd have all scarpered.
That is true. Now that I love this, because going through these bits with you, I've read this many times and I understand most of the connections here. I don't think you can ever send all the connections between everything in these books. But, you know, I understand a lot of what's going on here and the references and the connections. But having your look at it of, yes, you could have just, you know, bopped a few people on the head, has now just made me think, is she trying to impart some knowledge onto the village, trying to, you know, broaden their horizons, so to speak? They've just been dealt with Trollocs and they've reacted in this way. And it's almost like she's disgusted with the way they've reacted to the Trollocs. It's kind of like my thought process now.
Yeah. And even to extend what you've just said, she might be trying to impart the knowledge on Rand.
Well, that was actually...
She's aware that he's right there.
That was 100% my next question. Do you think she knows that Rand's watching?
If she's bonded, if you like, to Lan,
mm-hmm,
then I should imagine she's aware that he's there. Surely she'd be aware that Rand is there. So, yeah, I would guess that the story is not just for the crowd. It's for those inside the inn as well.
Yeah.
I mean, she's about to take him away from somewhere he feels safe. Well, he did feel safe. So perhaps it's got there's a motive there as well of, you know, telling this story of how brave they used to be in order to sort of give him a bit of a boost and make him think, well, that's who I want to be.
So it's kind of like a bit of a G up for everybody in respect, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
get the village a bit more you know, you can deal with worse, you've dealt with worse, or your ancestors dealt with worse type thing. And also to, you know, for the boys of, you know, we might be heading off into the unknown, but you're made of stern stuff and you can handle it type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that brings us, my lovelies, to the end of chapter 9. And also the end of this episode. Now, before we go, I do want to let you know that Nal and I recorded 2 more chapters, and they will follow on in the next episode. But I have a couple of shout-outs to do before I let you leave today. And those would be to some new Patreonies. Now, they've been patrons for a good few weeks now, but I record a fair bit in advance, so when I get around to editing, it's always a little bit behind. But I want to say thank you to the fabulous Snakes and Foxes as the first. So welcome to my Patreon. It's wonderful to have you here. I'm glad to have you. You've joined the server, you're having fun and giggles, and you actually even listened to this episode, which is great, and I really appreciated having you there, so welcome. The second of my patrons, also joining at the Borderland level, is Memo Art. Memo Art is another fabulous content creator in the community. She does wonderful chibis and all sorts of Wheel of Time things, as well as Cosmere things and other such drawings. If you haven't seen her stuff, please go check it out. But yes, it's wonderful to have you here as a patron, Memo. If anyone is interested in joining Memo, Snakes and Foxes, and my other patrons in our family have the special access to live recordings, server suggestions, you can get content early if you join other levels, and as well as many other benefits such as merchandise and possibly even podcast appearances. Please do check me out, Malkir Talks on Patreon, and you know, please feel free to join at any level. All contributions are welcome. They help me run the channel, help me, you know, put things towards equipment or you know, better software, whatever those things are needed, and put me into positions where I can start to run competitions and other items such as that. But yeah, that is the end of today's episode. As always, please check out my other stuff that we do, the YouTube channel as mentioned earlier, and if you like Tam jokes or dad jokes, if you want to call them by this world's name, please follow me on Twitter, Malkir Talks, or at MalkiriR. And until next time, listeners, may you always find water and shade.